Yeah, what up, what's going on, y'all? This is Victory, BX Supreme Promoter, representing the Grind Ethics Mixtape Show, basically. Know what I mean? Now I'm Shane. I'm here with my sister, Just Call Me T. She has a wonderful podcast online. But before I get her on the show for this interview, anybody that liked this episode of the Grind Ethics Mixtape Show, I'd be very grateful if anyone could hit me off with a donation, anything you like. My link is Cash App, Grind Ethics Cash App. Also follow me on Instagram. Actually, I got back into my other Instagram. Remember I told you, don't hit me up on Grind Ethics Mixtape Show? Well, for some strange reason, I got back into my old or my first Grind Ethics Instagram page, which has been 2 years. So I got Grind Ethics Mixtape Show. You can follow me on Grind Ethics Mixtape Show at Instagram and Grind Ethics Media at Instagram. All right? Anyway, I'm here with my sister once again. Just Call Me T. What's going on, sister?
Hey, what's going on? You got hacked? What happened?
I'm sorry?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, now I hear you. I'm sorry. I'm here with my sister, Just Call Me T.
Yo, and hello, it's me, Just Call Me T. Marie. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you reaching out, asking to, you know, do this little virtual link up. But no, I was asking, were you hacked? Like, what happened to your page?
If I was what?
If your page was hacked.
I don't know. No, it wasn't hacked. What happened was, it's a long story. I was trying to start a whole new group page. Oh, it's a long story.
Oh, all right. We'll say it for
And it's funny because the how I got into it is, you know, Instagram, they basically took me from the live. I got no live on Grind Ethics Media no more for some reason, right?
They banned you from going live?
I think they did. So I went to Google and they were like, yo, listen, just uninstall your Instagram app and reinstall it, whatever. And that's what I did. And all of a sudden, I got my first Grind Ethics page back. I was like, oh, shit. So it's like, you know when you're looking for something important and you end up finding something that you was looking for years ago?
That's
a fact. I'm like, yo.
Well, congrats, you got your page back.
And I got over.
Make sure that I'll go and follow.
Yeah, definitely. Grind Ethics Mixtape Show. Now I got like maybe 2,000 and some change followers all together.
Nice. Good shit.
But yeah, we're here to talk about you, sister. What made you want to host your own and produce your own podcast show?
I got into podcasting when I started working corporate. So, like, during the day, I was used to, like, working retail, like, my whole life and shit like that, and, like, fast-paced customer service type jobs. So the first time that I got a sit down like behind a desk job, I was like, damn, I don't have nothing to keep me occupied throughout the day. So I ended up coming across podcasting, started following a bunch of different ones, you know, Drink Champs by Nori, Brilliant Idiots with, you know, Charlamagne Tha God, Lip Service with Angela Yee, and just a bunch of other little ones. And I was like, yo, there is a whole, like, you know, subculture in podcasting where people just get around, talk shit, you know, share their opinion, share their point of views. I need to be in on this shit. So on my lunch break at work, I used to go live on Facebook and just talk shit with my friends. And little by little, I just started developing it to a podcast. I'm sorry. I was painting earlier, was sipping and shit like that. So I'm a little slurred.
So good. I like your background of the show. It's more professional than my fucking vlog and shit. But your background, is real artistic. It makes me feel like I'm in slavery though when I watch it, but I like it. The picture of the black person getting beat up by a black hand and a white hand. I understand the science behind that.
That's funny. I'm glad you said that. No, so that's for my Facebook Live. So, like, I started a separate, you know, show from my podcast where I go live on Facebook, kind of like how I used to back when I first started.
Okay.
And I would have my friends call in. So to make it look nice, I started fucking with, like, virtual production and stuff. So I highlight different black artists every week, and I showcase their artwork. So the person that you're talking about, I think that's the one that was done by Marcus Effin Prime. I'm not 100% sure, but it wasn't getting beat up. They were, like, you know, measuring and, you know, sizing the person up, and it's just a very, like, thought-provoking piece. I'm going to send it to you so you can actually see it for real. But I'm mad you said slavery.
It sounded like that because, you know, us as original people, you know, I don't like to use the word black too much, you know? Because last time I checked, when I looked in in the mirror, I looked at a brown-skinned man. But but anyway, you know, that's why I'm like, you know, but I don't be like brown skin matters. Brown skin lives matter. But and I still don't get this whole black and brown power shit. Do you? Before I ask the same question, do you get this whole black and brown power shit? Because I know what your show is about, and I'm about to ask you later. But what does this whole black and brown power shit mean to you? Because it don't make no sense to me. I mean,
really?
But, because ain't African Americans, ain't a lot of us brown skin? Why Hispanic people only brown skin? I mean, we're brown skin too. I'm brown skin. I'm not Hispanic. But anyway, that's a whole nother topic.
So when you say black and brown, it's because you want to be all inclusive. Some Latinos, Latinx, Latinx, however you want to pronounce it, some of them don't necessarily see themselves as black. They'll see themselves as Afro-Latina, Afro-Caribbean, whatever the case may be. But because, you know, being quote-unquote black has had so much issues and had so much, like, surrounded, you know, a lot of people don't ever want to associate themselves with it. Like myself, I'm, you know, born and raised in the Bronx. But
oh, you too? Oh, me too.
Yeah. So my ethnicity is Jamaican. My family, I'm first generation born here. My mother came here as a teenager, all that stuff. So technically, I would identify as Afro-Caribbean if I wanted to be politically correct. But ask anybody else, like, in just common conversation, I'm black, I'm Bronx, I'm hood, you know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily have to be Caribbean or brown or whatever. I'm a dark-skinned girl from the Bronx, grew up around, you know, a lot of friends who are in the project. At the end of the day, you add all of that up, I'm black. I have Jamaican roots, yes. I have Jamaican heritage, yes. But, you know, end of the line, point-blank period, I'm black. You feel me? But not a lot of people can identify with that. So that's a personal journey for everybody. You feel me?
Yeah,
but
it is.
Black and brown, you just want to include everyone. So
yeah, but you got... But when people say black and brown power, it's like... Because we know the history. I know you know the history of the so-called Hispanics or whatever, or Latinos, whatever. They us. Mm-hmm. So when you say black and brown power... But when you use the word "and," you're indicating that there's a difference, like honey and milk. You know what I'm saying? You're indicating there's a difference, but there ain't no too much of a difference between African. I mean, because at the end of the day, we all melanated people, you know?
Right.
Because some people might look at me different because my parents are straight from Africa, so they might be like, "You African? You're not one of us." You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
oh. I definitely get you. I just feel like, you know, it's everybody's personal journey. Like, for Latino people who do not want to say, like, they're black, they may identify more with their Spanish, whether it's Spanish from Spain, whether it's Spanish from, you know, Central America, whether it's Spanish from wherever, like, if they want to identify with that part of themselves, they very well have that choice. Because part of being, you know, this new generation of racially diverse people, you can claim whichever side of you you want to. But you cannot ignore that as a Latino, you still have roots in Africa, in blackness, in Africanness. I won't say African-Americanness because that's a specific experience to a specific group of people. But for, like, Latino or black and brown, as they would say, like, you know, their experience is a little bit different than ours. They face not only a color barrier, some of them face a language barrier. So they deserve to have their own identifier for, you know, whatever their experience is.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Listen, Poppy, listen, Mommy. I just want to know that when shit hits the fan, I just want to know if you got our backs. Because at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day.
That is all. I don't care what you
want to
be.
I don't give a fuck. Because if you...
Mexicana, whatever. But all you going to be on the front lines.
Oh, you going to be with us, Poppy, or Mommy. Because, you know, because at the end of the day, you get fucked up by police. And if you was in Georgia, you get lynched too.
Right.
If you was in Georgia.
Right.
The motherfuckers be like, oh no, I'm Dominican, I'm Puerto Rican. No, motherfucker, you a nigga. Get in the fucking rope. That's what the fuck they always tell you. Get in the fucking rope.
And a lot of them don't realize that. If you get pulled over on the street, you get the same treatment as us.
You get the same
treatment. They don't give you special, you know,
but there is,
because you got a little accent to how you talk and blah, blah, blah. Nah, fuck you. But you're getting up there the same exact way.
Exactly.
The sooner a lot of them realize that, the sooner, you know, we can move forward and really, you know, band together and have real unity.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is such thing as Hispanic privilege, just like this African privilege. This time's when certain Africans gave me a pass, but didn't give, you know, certain black Americans no pass because they see my last name. It's a fucking Yoruba name. So they're like, you get, you know what I mean? So there is, but I'm more lenient towards, just like you. I'm just a brother from the Bronx at the end of the day. Because when I went to Nigeria, it's like I was an alien. And my family's from there. I was culture shock.
Going to Jamaica for the first time as an adult is definitely like, it just hit different. Like, I was able to see certain things, I was able to experience certain things, but I do appreciate, like, going back home, and so to speak, and like learning where my mom was from, so to speak, you know, like where my grandma, and seeing where my people actually have come from. Because so many African American, quote unquote, if you want to be politically correct, a lot of them don't have that opportunity to go back somewhere and see where their people are from. So as much as a shock as it is, you know what I mean? Like, as much as it is a difference, like, I still embrace that shit, because that is a privilege in itself, that I can go to the house my mom was raised in, or the house, you know, my aunts and uncles, you know, played in and stuff like that. So I'm very grateful of that.
At the end of the day, you got another country you could go home to. And when I was a kid, I didn't really notice, and I definitely didn't appreciate the fact that I got some place to go home, to go to, just in case shit hits the fan over here. You know, like, because right now, as we speak, I don't know if you noticed, but Africa is the place to be. Less cases of coronavirus.
I have a homegirl who just texted me, I think this morning, talking about some, yo, I'm about to buy property in Gambia. I was like,
yo, Gambia is the shit. Gambia is the shit. Yo, sister, I don't know how much you're paying for rent, but whatever you're paying for rent, I don't know if you live in a hood. I don't assume that you do. But
no, I'm very hood adjacent. I live in the northern part of the Bronx, so, you know, I'm close enough to the project that I get the vibe, but I'm far enough removed where I don't have to live, like, you know.
Well, in the hood out here.
With it, but I'm just saying, you know, I had a little bit of privilege on my own end. You feel me? And I acknowledge that.
Well, I hear in the hood, cats are paying $1,500, damn near $2,000 to live in a New York ghetto. Oh, yeah. Out there in Gambia, you could live in the mini mansion. You could pay rent in the mini mansion.
That's what she was telling me. She was like,
I'm like, yo.
$800 and shit. I was like, but the thing about it is what about outside of my mansion? Like, am I going to have a Dunkin' Donuts? Am I going to have...
Not really. Not too much.
If you go to Ghana
and Nigeria, because that's kind of in the same price range. Well, Ghana is kind of getting up there as far as price in Nigeria, but I don't think in Gambia, not yet. Gambia do got a Dunkin' Donuts. I think they do, but you're not going to find a random Dunkin' Donuts in Gambia. You could grow some coca, you could grow some chocolate. But anyway, we were just going for off. Anyway, that's what your show is about. You talk about random things. That's why I was like, from what I hear, because I've been doing your research, I've been listening to your show.
Have you really?
Yeah, I gotta do it. Yeah, I'm not one of these motherfucking. I'm not these fucking rappers that fucking don't do no research. I just become podcasters.
I'm
stop.
Developing a few different shows, really. So, like, I have my podcast, PCPOV, which was what kickstarted, you know, my media journey. I have my live that I told you about called Live After Five. I'm trying to rebrand it now as Live AF. I do that weekly where I just do, you know, current events. I talk to my people. You know, I have folks call in. We have different discussions, you know, about different topics and whatnot. But then I'm also trying to develop my YouTube channel to kind of be like an official channel. Like, you know, like just like how you would go to like a BET or a VH1 or, you know, any other channel on TV. I want to develop my YouTube channel to be like that. So, like, I'm in the process of, you know, getting different talent for people who have show ideas but don't have, you know, the means to produce.
You want to be like a revolt.
Yeah, almost like a revolt, you know what I mean? Because I love the production side of everything that I do. So if I can share my skills with other people who, you know, don't have the 2-3 years that it took for me to really, like, get my bearings and get to where I'm at now, sure, you can hire me. I'll help you do your show. I'll produce, put it together, get you the green screen, all of that good shit. And we could put out this content and get this information to the people. So, like, I'm working with a duo who wants to do financial literacy. I have somebody who wants to do, like, a self-help segment. I have, like, a bunch of comedy people who want to do, like, different stuff. And I'm still looking for more folks to, like, you know, join the team and build.
Yeah, definitely. That's what we need. That's what we need, man, because, the shit that happened with Nick Cannon, I'm like, I definitely do not want to be a part of their fucking world. I used to when I first started doing producing and broadcasting content. I've been doing it since cable access was the shit, you know, back in the early 2000s. Yeah, yo, listen, I'm 41. I remember Ralph McDaniel's Video Music Box. I grew up watching. I don't know, you know about Ghettonomics. I don't know how old you are, but
I'm 32. I'm right around.
Yeah, you're around that age. You know a little bit about Channel 68, Channel 64, Bronx Network.
Yeah, oh yeah. All the Bronx Net channels on, what was it, on Sunday night, they used to show you all the teen parties. So
you talking about Sex Boogie.
Kids was up to school.
You talking about Sex Boogie.
Parents could see what you was up to when you went out on teen night. They could keep an eye on you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. I remember Sex Boogie used to do teen nights on a Wednesday night. I'm like, hold up, you got these kids covered. You got these kids up in a fucking skate key in the fucking dirty ass Bronx for like 2 a.m.
Hey,
I don't mean to say dirty ass Bronx.
Watch your mouth.
I'm from the Bronx, so I can say dirty Bronx. But I'm sorry. But
we're not dirty. We just got our own flavor, you heard?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly. And we're safe from hurricanes. That's one special thing about the Bronx. We're inland. You know?
Facts.
But yeah, I'm like, wow. But yeah, what was I talking about earlier?
You were talking about how you watch my show and that you dig what I do.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Definitely. So you said you was talking about producing other people's shows. Definitely. That's good. I was definitely thinking about something like that, too. Oh, yeah. Nick Cannon. We was talking about Nick Cannon. Matter of fact, how you feel about that situation? It's your interview. How you feel about that situation? And would you ever want to be down with their world?
First and foremost, let me just say, I did not find anything wrong with what Nick Cannon said. When I watched the clip, I feel like he tried so hard to say the right thing. Like, I saw him physically search for all the words that he used. Like, he wanted to make sure that he did not, you know, offend, you know, speak negatively of, you know, provide false information of. Like, he was very cautious in how he spoke. And the fact that people still saw fit to have issue or find issue with what he said just goes to prove how much work we still have to do as quote-unquote black and brown people. The fact that he can't even express an opinion in a way that is so non-harmful and still get dragged for it is just another way that black voices get, you know, silent.
Exactly.
Because again, he didn't say anything. Like, everybody was talking, it's anti-Semitic. I'm like, I did not hear him say anything disparaging about the Jewish people.
Now, he didn't.
He didn't even really mention.
No, he did. He did, because you got
alluded to. He didn't really say Jewish people.
No, he didn't.
And blah, blah, blah. It was just all, and it's the truth. If you ever looked up any type of history, you know that the Moorish people, which were black and brown folks, taught other ones how to bathe, how to clean, how to cleanse, all of those things. It's in the books that they don't teach you in school, but anybody who grew up, you know, as a kid of the 90s, you had black teachers who put you on to this shit.
So yeah, that's true. That's
so
true.
So we knew this from way back when. He didn't say anything that was of, you know, any news, not at least not to me, but the fact that he can't even say that without being, you know, attacked is crazy. It is crazy. So I feel bad for him. Like, I don't think he should have lost all of his jobs, because you know he had a bunch of them. I don't think he should have lost any of them. I think that people should have either just took it with a grain of salt, or they should have just pulled him to the side and been like, all right, now you can't be talking all of this, you know, blah, blah, blah. But to just flat out be like, you're fired, I feel like something legal should happen behind that.
Exactly, because he didn't say, like you said, he didn't say anything about Jews, even though he did, because he did mention cave people, did he? He mentioned cave people, right?
He did. He was
because
like,
you got to understand, they were the first ones to come out the caves, the so-called Jews.
Savages, they, you know, did not cover themselves, did not wash, did not bathe, did not, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't do that shit. It's just fact. Like, we've seen it. Because I don't know what history books you've ever, you know, been through, but I don't really know too many stories of back in the days where those of the Caucasus Mountains were the cleanliest of all people. Like, I've never heard that ever.
Nah, hells no. Hell, that's what they call them, Caucasian people, because they come from the Caucasus Mountains.
Listen, I'm just saying, but again, I don't know.
It's tough. That's why I don't want to be in that world. Now, I wanted to at one point, but I was like, nah, I'll be too much for these people, because I know how I am. First of all, I'm a melanated man, dark-skinned melanated man from the nation of gods and earths. My ancestors were fucking Yoruba warriors. That's why we didn't get captured. You know what I'm saying? We fought back. And what else? Yeah, I said I'm an Aries too. Yeah, I can't do it. I can't do it. And in person, you know how us Aries are. We gotta be in control.
Oh, you Aries?
Yeah, April 6th. We gotta be in control.
Okay. That's my people. You know, that's my gang.
That's it. She said gang.
I'm all for it. Cause like even with me, like part of being in the corporate world, like there was no one at my job that looked like me. There was no one, you know, from the Bronx, from the hood. There was no one who, you know, like my boss, for instance, used to talk about how she paid for all four of her kids to go to college. Like literally out of her pocket every month, she paid for every single one of her kids to go to school. And I was like, I don't know what that is. I remember being, you know, in the financial aid office begging my advisor to, like, look the other way while my loan application is still being processed. You know what I mean? Like, that shit blew my mind. And to know that I was able to make it to that level, of course, I used to, like, talk about different ways that I would thug the corporate. Like, that was, like, one of my little hashtags back when I was doing my lives. It was like, yeah, when you come to vacation days, when it comes to contract hires, when it comes to this, this is what you do. This is how you get them to sign off on this. This is how you get reimbursed for this. Yes, thug the corporate. Work the system. Don't let the system work you. Fuck out of here. That's all about it. You see me?
I hear that. So what's your methods in promoting your shows?
I haven't really done a lot in promotions outside of like just word of mouth. So like I have my core group of friends and supporters who will tune into my lives every week, who comment, who, you know, will share, who put their friends on, and I appreciate the fuck out of them, because without them, like, my show would be nowhere near where it is right now. Like, you know, I really do big up a lot of my peoples. Like, some of them are my friends from college, some of them are friends from high school, just like, you know, just a collection of people who have been in my life, you know, for a number of years, and they've been with me since the very beginning, so they've seen me when, you know, my production was shitty, my camera looked crazy, you know, and I didn't really have no aesthetics about myself, and they've watched me progress. And so, you know, they believe in the vision. Like, they see me growing, they see me moving, and they're, you know, down for the ride. So I appreciate the fuck out of them for everything that they do in, you know, sharing and posting my show. But as I go on and as I get more episodes under my belt and I get better at, you know, putting it together, I see myself actually going forth and, you know, taking that plunge in Facebook ads, Instagram sponsored ads, you know, putting it out there, having it show up on other people's, you know, news feeds. I just want to build a very solid foundation before I take it to that next step.
Okay. Oh, you didn't answer the second question. The other question I asked you about, would you ever want to be in that world, like a Netflix, HBO, or basically their world?
I feel what you mean. I definitely do, because I always say, like, I don't necessarily want to be a celebrity in everything that I do, because I don't want it that everything that I do gets criticized. Because I'm very much the clapback person, and I realize that once you get to a certain level, certain clapbacks are not socially acceptable. So for me, my goal is finding my tribe. The people who feel the way that I feel, who think the way that I think, the people who can understand objectivity, the people who can understand context, the people who understand nuance for different situations, the people who don't subscribe to groupthink, the people who don't mind, you know, being outside of the box, to the left of the box, saying, fuck the box. Like, I want to find more of those types of people, because I know I'm not the only one. So the sooner I can find my tribe and the sooner I can find the people who fuck with those types of values, the better off I'll be, and I'll never even have to worry about being accepted by that world. Because once you have your tribe and once you have people who are down with you, you're unstoppable. Every person that I've ever heard talk about anything business related, they're like, listen, if you can have 1,000 solid followers, fans, group, you know, whatever you want to call them, if you can have 1,000 people who fuck with you, there's nothing you can do. So I've always looked at it as, I got to get my 1,000. If I can get my 1,000, I'm Gucci. And everybody outside of that 1,000, y'all just excess. But my focus is making sure that I am true to myself and I put out and I show out for that 1,000.
Yeah, definitely. Have anybody been on some wise ass shit and like, oh, are you getting paid from this? Are you getting paid from this?
So funny story, there was a dude who I know when I first started, he had made jokes about me starting this out, and you know, I kinda came at him and I was like, yeah, when I get my first 100,000 listens, I'll have you on my show. No, he asked me something about, you know, like, well, how many people listen to your show? Blah, blah. And I think at the time, I had, like, maybe 70-something listeners at one point in time. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm at, you know, less than 100, but I'm working my way up. But he said something real stupid. So that made me be like, all right, well, when I get my first 100,000, when I get to, like, that level that they're expecting, then I'll reach out to you to have you on my show. A year later, he calls me, and we're just having a casual conversation, and he asks me, like, yo, you should record this call. Like, you should make this a show. Like, I really want to have this conversation and put this on your platform. I'm like, yeah, but I haven't gotten to my 100,000 yet. He's like, no. I still want to do it, blah, blah, blah. So he came around a year later because he's seen me put in the work. He's heard how much I've changed, how much I've adapted, how much I've grown. And so he fucks with me now. So we did a whole episode that I'm getting ready to put out. So shout out to him.
Okay. So you made him a believer.
Exactly.
That's cool. I hear that. that definitely feels good when somebody... It feels good when people tell me they listen to my whole podcast, every single episode. I'm like, well, get the hell out of here, world. You know, I'm like...
Yeah, it's always a good feeling. Like, I love it when I do a show and, like, I'm guaranteed to get at least 5 texts or messages any show that I do, whether it's the podcast or my live. I'm always guaranteed to have one of my friends be like, yo, I love the show, but next time you should talk about this. Or, you know, blah, 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 we didn't get to talk about yada, yada, yada. And so, like, I have all of these people who are so engaged to where, like, they give me the energy that I need to, like, really keep this going. Because sometimes it ain't always easy. Sometimes, you know, production, you know, what is it called, Murphy's Law, everything that can go wrong will go wrong.
Yeah.
There are days where, you know, my ring light don't work, or my batteries are dead, or, you know, my Wi-Fi is out, or whatever, or my sound is jacked up, like, all of those things come, but because I know what it is that I'm doing and why I'm doing it, that makes me go that much harder to get it done.
That's peace. So how's this whole pandemic been treating you? Have you been getting busy on during lockdown or whatever?
Pandemic has really gotten me to a point where I have had the time to slow down and really plan. So a lot of shit when I started out, it was just like going with the flow, so to speak. So like when I first started, I was like, all right, I need to be out. I need to be meeting people. I need to be networking. I need to build like my Instagram followership. So I was going out to events. I'm constantly collecting, you know, like friends and acquaintances and associates. And I'm doing all of this stuff. And I was neglecting so much of like my production. So then when everything shut down, it was like, okay, so now everybody has to kind of, like, be virtual or go virtual. There's no more going to the studio. There's no more, you know, showing up to set. Everybody is, like, refiguring out how to do shit. Here's my opportunity. So that's when I really, like, researched how to build a virtual set, how to, you know, make my aesthetic, what I wanted it to look like, the skills that I needed when it came down to green screen, when it came down to mics and you know, sounds and all of this shit. And it really forced me to put together something that I was really proud of. And that's the set that you now see with the, you know, artwork and all of that stuff. So I'm really grateful for Corona. Like, everybody else is tight about it, but Corona was lit for me.
Yo, listen, I done made, during the coronavirus, I was on my Cash App, because, you know, I don't trust electronic money. I'm a street hustler. I like you probably see me in a D-Train hustling. You probably see me in D-Train hustling some candy, waters, and socks or whatever. But anyway, yeah, I'm the famous uptown hustler. Anyway. But I couldn't go outside and sell anything. I couldn't sell a pair of socks or nothing, right? And my suppliers were closed. I called my supplier. He was like, "I'm in Jersey." I'm like, "Oh man, okay." So I hit up my Cash App and I was like, "Hold up," I was like, "I probably don't got nothing on this Cash App." Then I was like, hold up, I got $10. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I know it was $10, but it's the first $10 that I ever made from the Grind Ethics mixtape show. And I've been hosting Grind Ethics since 2006 from donations, asking for donations. So I made money being locked in the crib, asking for donations. So I actually made money without going outside. I'm like, wow, this is a fucking, you know... And that goes back to, since the cities are finished, or since the cities are kind of open, I done received like 2 promotional accounts, because aside from being a host, I got my own marketing company that's attached to the show. So I got 2 promotional accounts. So,
that is
what's up. Yeah. So I'm like, wow, that's good. And I'm like, yo. And that makes me go, and that takes me back to that book I heard about called The Obstacles is the Way. And most people don't understand that. Especially us coming from the hood. We're all caught up in survival mode. Everything gotta be about survival mode. There's no such thing as gradually growing into something. Cause I've been doing where we from, there's no such thing as investing your time and energy and not, even though you're not getting short-term money. Short-term money is that broke shit, really. It took me being broke to understand that short-term money is that broke shit. and Grind Ethics is really a long-term...
I've never really seen it that way before.
Yeah, and Grind Ethics for me is a long-term investment, and I'm just now getting paid... I'm not getting paid crazy money, but it's gonna down the line, I'm seeing it from now, it's gonna be a big return on investment.
Absolutely. I mean, you gotta start shuffling. Like, regardless, you know, you gotta make a dollar before you can make a million. Like,
of course.
Nobody getting, you feel me? But I haven't yet gotten to that point. Right now I'm still in the, I'm just now getting to the part where I'm fully invested in myself.
Exactly.
I've bought equipment. I've, you know, put together an aesthetic. I've learned a certain, you know, level of skills. You know, I'm actively learning more and adding to it. Like, I have a really good mentor right now who has been, like, helping me on, like, the editing tip and, like, really getting my production skills up to par. And I just want to be able to share that with someone else, because, like, I got into it because every time I tried to, like, go to somebody to collab or go to somebody to work with, it was always like a money thing, and it's like, oh, I want $100 an hour, $70 an hour, blah blah. And I'm like, yo, I'm just starting. I don't have that type of money to just, you know, be spending. And it's just like, all right, I get it. You've been doing this for 10, 5, 7, 8 years. That's what you feel like you're worth. that's cool, but I'm not there yet. So let me learn what I can learn on my own, and then I can help people who could fit the budget that I was going to be able to fit. And then as I build and move up, then, you know, I'll get to where they were at with their prices and stuff like that. But it's really about, you know, everything doesn't have to be a money grab. Everything doesn't have to be a profit. Sometimes you just got to do things for the best, you know, of the community. Some people have a message that they really just need to get out. They have something, a product, a show, an idea, or something that needs to be shared. And so I feel like that's where I come in, to be able to, like, all right, you want to come up? I want to come up too. Let's come up together.
Yeah, most of our people don't understand that. Well, that's why we fucked up in the game. That's why there's no more Black Wall Street in America.
I don't necessarily want to say it's where we fuck up. It's just that, you know, sometimes you got to be able to see a bigger picture. Sometimes, you know, your bills are your bills. Your stress is your stress. Your responsibility is your responsibility. But sometimes you got to look outside of yourself and see the bigger picture.
See the bigger picture.
I only can say that because of the support and because of the people that I have behind me. So I get it. That's not the route for everybody. Some people really just got to get that money, because if they don't get it, they don't eat.
Exactly.
If they don't get it, they don't have a roof over their head. So trust me, I understand. I don't knock nobody's hustle. But I feel like there's a place for everybody, and everybody is in their place. And my place right now, at this current present moment, is to help the people who's going to come up, just like I am. So that's why when you reached out and you was like, you wanted to do the interview, absolutely, like, I'm on it. Like, no funny shit. Like, I appreciate, you know, you taking the time to check out what I was doing, to, you know, get up to speed, and then to be like, yo, I want her on my show, because this is only, like, I want to say maybe my second or third guest appearance somewhere. So, you know, I'm clearly doing something right, so... Pat's on the back to me.
Mm-hmm.
But no funny. I do appreciate you reaching out and asking me to do this. Like,
Definitely.
I appreciate the acknowledgement, for real, for real.
Definitely, because, you know what I mean? I'm for the peoples at the end of the day. I'm for the peoples. You can't, my whole thing is my individual accomplishments, my individual goals is my individual goals, but my individual goals don't mean, I don't want to say don't mean nothing, but it's not bigger than the bigger picture. It's not bigger than the collective. Because there's a lot of successful people. There's a lot of successful so-called minorities, whatever. Big deal. You know, a lot of them ain't doing nothing for us. So it's like,
You're right. I mean, you got Kanye right now talking all types of craziness, but he does charge people an arm and a leg and a firstborn for his sneakers and all this shit, and now he wanna claim mental health and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yo, what have you been doing this whole time when you was taking people money? Like, we need answers.
Exactly. But thank you, my sister, for being on the Grind Ethics Mixtape Show. Can't wait to be on your show for an interview.
Absolutely. I would love to have you on PCPOV.
Yeah, we got to talk about this.
Your experiences, get your point of view on some topics, but I have to warn you, if we go there. So if you have anything that, you know, is off limits or things you don't necessarily want to talk about, you best send me an email and tell me beforehand, because we talk about it all.
Oh, damn. Oh, okay. I hear you. I'll bring some trees.
So we gotta get you under the influence and get you to talking.
Oh, damn. Oh, man. A second thought, maybe I should fall back. No, I'm just playing. Hey, man, it's whatever. Definitely. I'm gonna come, yeah, whatever. I'll come through, or we do a phone interview, whatever.
No doubt. I can't wait.
All right. Oh, yeah. Where, your contacts. People want to know where to contact you at.
Okay. So on Instagram and Facebook. Facebook. You can find me at Just Call Me T Marie, which is JustCallMeTMarie. Email is justcallmetmarie@gmail.com. My YouTube right now is tinychat.com/hoodlogic_TV, which is hoodlogic TV. And then if anything, all of my links are just under linktree.com/justcallmetmarie. So everything will be on that one particularly.
No doubt, sister. Yo, anybody that liked this interview, I'd be very grateful if anyone could hit me off with a small donation. Like I said, the link is Grind Ethics Cash App, Grind Ethics Cash App. And you can follow me on Grind Ethics Media at Instagram, Grind Ethics Twitter, and also Grind Ethics Mixtape Show on Instagram.
PCPOV.
Okay, you can cash app her too.
If y'all want to drop any coins,
okay, peoples. And remember, peoples, tell a friend to tell a friend that's all about the motherfucking grind, basically.